yesterday. The press of the Near East in general are very fearful that the Near East tension could likely lead to a thermonuclear war at any time. Kissinger's personal papers are to be made property of the government judge. Transcripts of former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, private telephone conversations, are not personal papers, but the property of the government. A federal judge ruled yesterday, much to the disdain of the power element of rule in the United States. The papers, shorthand notes taken by secretaries and transcribed later, were given to the nation by Dr. Kissinger under the proviso that the public would not be allowed access to them for 25 years or until 5 years after his death, whichever is later. No wonder he did so many infamous things like murdering Dr. Yende in Chile. He wouldn't want it known till he was dead. The notes cover the period after he joined the Nixon administration as National Secretary and the Security Advisor in January 1969 until late 1976 after President Ford's election defeat. A group of journalists and historians, among them the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, took the case to court, arguing that the papers are government property and therefore should be accessible under the Freedom of Information Act. Yesterday, Judge John Lewis Smith ruled in their favor to the surprise of those in the country who were seeking, with much opposition and lobbying, that this not be so. But it is thought likely there will be an appeal against the decision that may reverse naturally, because there's too much there that could be revealed about the corporate murders of the United States. The judge ruled that the records were produced on government time and with the aid of department employees, equipment, materials, and other public resources. Having been prepared and transcribed in the discharge of this official duty, his official duties, the notes are the property of the United States, not him, it added. The judge ordered the papers to be returned from the Library of Congress, where they are housed, to the State Department. The Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press hailed the decision. In a statement, Executive Director Jack Landau said, "This decision is a major victory for the underlying principles of the Freedom of Information Act, that agency documents amassed by government officials, no matter how exalted their office, belong to all the United States people." He said that the committee would, if necessary, take the case all the way to the Supreme Court. Although it is the thought of the writer that it will not succeed, that it will be reversed, because there's too hot information in these archives of Kissinger that would reveal things that would be too dangerous for the American public to know about the awful acts of the American government. The committee was one of the groups which challenged President Nixon's right to keep documents and tapes accumulated while in office, a case eventually decided against Mr. Nixon by the Supreme Court. However, Mr. Nixon had already gotten rid of most of the papers while the debate was going on. I think it's important, with the possible visit of our beloved head of the party, the People's National Congress, Dr. Ptolemy Reed, who is the Secretary of the Party of Guyana, and the Deputy Prime Minister, or the Prime Minister, or some of the dignitaries, who are likely to come this week. That's why we have to keep everything up to the highest par. But we should know some background of the sugar strike that has been so dangerous to the Guyanese government and economy. The PNC policy towards the strike. The strike is a political weapon. It is being used to cripple the economy in an austerity year when they are fighting for their life as a socialist nation. It is being done on the eve of the election in order to cause disruption and general unrest, which will reflect badly on the socialist government. The cane must be harvested for economic reasons. It's the very lifeblood, because this economy has been kept from being diversified by the imperialists that formerly ruled it. The WRSM has been solicited, among other organizations, to harvest the cane. Requests made of us to harvest also. We are not economically able at this time. Most of the sugar workers are East Indian. The concept of profit sharing. Sugar workers want are demanding 250,000 retroactive funds. By the way, the government was in no way censorious or critical of us when we said we could not give any of our personnel in harvesting the sugarcane. The concept of profit sharing of a socialist country, the sugar workers want, or are demanding rather, 250,000 retroactive funds from profit made in the sugar industry. The government is not in the economic position to refund this kind of money to any single group in the Guyanese economy, and is contrary to socialist principle in the first place. All cooperatives, all socialist nationalized industries, should share their profits with all elements of the population. It's the duty of the sugar workers to help build hospitals, to build roads, to do these irrigation and drainage projects that I've just been mentioning, not to just give all their profits to the sugar workers. In a socialist society, all share and share alike. The government is not in an economic position to refund this kind of money to any single group in the Guyanese economy at this time. In a socialist economy, profits from one industry do not always necessarily go back into that one limited industry. They are used to develop the economic strength of the nation in general and are therefore used in the most needed spot. The balance of payments, we need to understand a little of that. The Guyanese government must sell more abroad than it spends buying from other countries in order to have a balanced budget. And that's the way they've kept the capitalists from destroying the economy. This is just like when you have a personal income. If you spend more money than you make, you will go into debt. And then finally you'll go broke or in bankruptcy. If a nation spends more money buying imported items from abroad than it takes in by selling items abroad, then it will go into debt and eventually go broke. And for that reason, that's why Guyana, wisely, under the PNC, our beloved party, has dictated that we will only buy or consume what we produce. And that's why all of us should be working towards self-sufficiency here, to use that which we produce. That's why we eliminated the gas that is in our kitchen and use our own wood. Why would we want to spend $100 a week for gas when we can cook just as well and actually, in many ways, the food is more tasty and the gas is a foreign exported item? Guyana's main exported items are sugar and rice. These items are exported to the Caribbean area primarily, and from these exports, the socialist government of Guyana brings in foreign currency. This is like income for a nation or for a family. If Guyana buys foreign soaps, perfumes, foods, or televisions or anything like this, machines, etc., the money is going out of the country, and that will cause them to be in debt and finally go broke, as I said, in bankruptcy. The socialist government policy of Guyana is then to reduce imported items as much as possible. That is, things like sardines, which are not that healthy for you in the first place, canned sardines only, soap, and we've been able to make our own soap here, and we must progress with that soap building. I'd like to see the report on how much soap we have in the Jonestown community, because we need to do that so we don't have to buy any soap. The sugar strike is trying to cripple the economy. That's why the socialist government of Guyana sees it not as a labor strike, but a political strike to destabilize, to cripple this socialist government, so that there is not a lot of excess sugar to sell abroad. Thus, Guyana will not have the revenue for its annual budget, and this will hurt all the Guyanese people. Its balance of payments will be out of balance. That is why this is a political strike. It directly affects the party in power, the Socialist Party, the PNC, which is the vanguard of Marxist-Leninism and to which we are loyal. And all of you, if you're talking, when we have guests, should understand this and be able to give the rationale as to why we oppose the sugar strike at this critical time in our beloved Guyana's history. It reflects on our economic stability as a country and is an attempt to paralyze the very economic structure of this newly third world emerging socialist government in Guyana. No one would debate that eventually sugar workers should get higher salaries than they are. And they're presently getting profit sharing for this year, but they cannot make it retroactive. This is impossible to put that burden on the government. It is the technique and the timing that makes this strike not a strike of the trade union class or the working class, but a political strike for ulterior political motivation. This ends my commentary on the sugar strike, which you ought to be familiar with as we have guests and be able to talk about. That was not the reading of a news article. Muslims call for greater unity and solidarity of all religions in Guyana. The Muslim faith, Islam faith, is the most expansive and the most wealthy and the largest sect next to Hindustani. The Hindu religion is the largest, and then Christendom follows. Thank goodness we're in a world at least where Christianity is the least in size. All religions, however, are losing numbers because people are becoming more aware of the materialistic nature of man and of nature, that there are no explanations for life other than material reasons. The only thing that you can believe in is what you see, the material energy of nature, the material energy of mind. Even the power of my healing is an energy force that goes out from my mind. It's material, not spiritual. To use the word spiritual, esoteric, or any influence other than materialism is to be counter-revolutionary. To speak of occult or metaphysical or all those spiritual systems, idealistic religious systems, is to be counter-revolutionary and thus unaware of true Marxist-Leninist thought. We should believe only in that which we can do with our hands and our own mind. We should believe that we came from matter and we shall return to matter. We should believe in Darwinian science evolution, that we came from the amoeba, that humankind, life, come out of the sea. And that's why we still go through in our birth cycle, all stages, even through the fish, up through the mammal, and you can watch it under the microscope. You can look at it through x-ray and see that the human baby goes through every stage, from the fish right down the amoeba to the fish, on up through every stage of the frog and the mammal as it becomes a newborn. We are related to Mr. Muggs down there very closely. Anyone can tell that we are cousins. There is no spiritual inception of history, no God that created us. We are accidents, creatures of energy combustion or something of that sort. Indeed, if there was any deity, it's some kind of maniacal deity that does things in threes, and it certainly has no relevance to us other than to be resisted and finally overthrown. Because certainly if there was a loving anthropomorphic deity, if there was any goodness in a god someplace in the universe, they would do something about the terrible amount of pain, dying, starvation, the 2 out of 3 babies that go to bed hungry. So we as socialists must not believe in God. We must be atheists by nature and oppose all religious, psychic, metaphysical, occult, and all kinds of religious idealism in any form that it takes. Call for release of prisoners. A petition bearing more than 1 million signatures calling for the immediate release of all people jailed solely for their beliefs was handed to the United Nations today by the human rights group Amnesty International, which is receiving very strong support in Guyana. The document handed to Secretary General Kurt Waldheim and General Assembly President Lazar Mojos of Yugoslavia, Communist Yugoslavia, expresses outrage that in many parts of the world, men and women who have neither used nor advocated violence suffer imprisonment solely because of their political or religious beliefs, their race, color, and language. It urges swift action by the United Nations Assembly to ensure strict observance in all countries of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Amnesty International, which won a Nobel Peace Prize earlier this year, said the petition marked the culmination of Prisoners of Conscience Year. It was signed by 1,121,609 people, individuals, and by international organizations representing more than 84 million people in 133 countries. However, in commentary, that's a very small number, only 1 million out of the world's nearly 4 billion population. That's a 3 billion some population. That is a frighteningly small amount. Not even the population hardly of little Guyana. This is just barely a little more than the population of Guyana. That's not a very good record for people. There should have been many, many more signatures than that. The Soviets have their own peace organization, the Stockholm Peace Conference, and they amassed some near 600 million signatures for the release of all political prisoners. Amnesty International has been more critical in most respects of communist policies than it has been of capitalist practices. Thus, the USSR does not hold Amnesty International in the respect or the high esteem that it might. And Guyana is not contributing financially to it. Because of late, the Amnesty International was even critical of a trial here in Guyana, which they claim is a political trial, which in my reading, I really cannot assume that it is. There's a lot of witnesses. I think some more should be tried for murder because they ignored the plight of the man in need, but I don't see it as a political trial per se. Thus ends the reading of news and commentary for this day, at this hour at least. We hope that you gain something from the news and hope that we gain some understanding of what we have in Guyana, what we believe in Guyana. And that's important, that we all have some political consciousness and social awareness and knowledge of news. Teachers are in need of watches. If others have their watches and do not need them, it would be good if you would give your watches to the school teachers. Some isolated other points of view on how we could get a general clock. Perhaps we can do that. The radio room can ask if we can get a main clock, but we are not able to put out any money for expense. I hope that all departments realize we are in a very difficult time, and I would like to hear opinions on how to make money, not how to spend it. Comrade Grubbs mentions that music tapes are being ruined by the strong electrical fields set up by the ham radio equipment. This should be eliminated immediately. All musical tapes should be taken out when not in use, and certainly not laid around where they can be damaged by the energy factor of our ham amateur radio band. I would appreciate if all people would look at themselves who are critical. We are still getting people writing criticisms who do not criticize themselves. And this is a very, very bad situation. I would like to ask to be improvised immediately that all crews have not only a coordinator, a supervisor of the crew or department, but a co-supervisor. And I demand that that co-supervisor criticize the supervisor. I notice in some departments that the supervisor and co-supervisor never criticize each other. I have noted Day, and a very fine worker, but his entire department, he praises everyone in the department. Impossible, impossible. There are critical, constructive criticisms, suggestions that can be given about every worker, and I demand that I not be insulted, my intelligence be insulted anymore by being sent those kinds of reports. All supervisors are turning in their criticisms and evaluations to Comrade Carter, and indeed, Comrade Carter, then Tim Carter, will give them to me. But I expect those evaluations to include self-criticism, and they must be critical of your work participants. It's impossible that all your workers would be above criticism. By the way, some are asking if there are any exceptions to titles. No, the doctor, no one will have any exception for titles. You can still maintain respect without maintaining the use of titles. In that, I agree, unless it's overridden and you can make proposals in the People's Rally. I don't mind being disagreed with. But having consulted with a cross-section of people who are not people just in my immediate presence of secretaries, it is of the opinion that no one should be called by a special title, doctor or nurse or educator, none should have a special title. You can still keep respect for your office by the way you maintain yourself, and you can still cause education to be communicated. In fact, I think much better if you avoid all of the remnants of elitism. Very dangerous about titles. That's why I want people to call me Dad or Jim. I don't impose that you call me Dad. I'd like for you to feel that I'm your dad. You'll never have a dad like me. That I know. I don't need any opinion on that. You'll never have anybody be husband, dad, mother, father, wife. You'll never have anyone that'll love you and care for you like I do. But you can call me Jim or Dad. And I dismiss these titles of father. And I insist, unless my logic is proved wrong and the logic of the cross-section of people that I've asked without telling who suggests that we keep these titles, I wouldn't do that because they're very honest people who suggested that we keep titles. I did not say who suggested it, but I have asked for sampling of opinion. And as of now, it is my opinion that there will be no use of titles. We will call people by name. And we can still avoid familiarity, which breeds contempt to some degree, or the buddy-buddy kind of system, I think, if we will require that the people respect the overseer or the doctor and show respect for the teacher, this still can be done without using some kind of a cold barrier alienating title system. The Chinese have practiced eliminating all titles and close working relationships, even in the military, with all branches. And I suggest that we use that as a sample and example. Stand by.
Yes, sister.
Continuing comments and suggestions. I read all of your comments, and I read, over 100 a day. Now it's over 100. Some of them very lengthy. By the way, B, did someone get to you to talk to you? That's good. Thank you. I appreciated your alertness. That was very good to note that brother's brief and other matters that will be brought to your attention. Thank you so much. And some of your suggestions of what we can do to resist enemy. Your courage in offering your own body. You that have offered your own life and body to your ideals touch me greatly. I know there are people who don't give a continental and would never put their neck forward. But some, in wanting to do something about this grievous assassination, have been bold in your courage. And we are simulating all these. I read all night long. I never took a wink of sleep. I did lay my head down, but I took no wink of sleep. I read, and I continue to read, well over 100 lengthy documents, all of which I must say most of. I don't think of one that has been given me in the last couple, 3 days that was not necessary. I'll go into some more suggestions that may be helpful. I think in the kitchen that we're going to have to get people that will volunteer, that will be more people to work so that the kitchen can give themselves a day off. They work more hours than normal. And they don't get a day off on Sunday. So I'm asking Central Committee, Steering Committee, coordinators to see that the kitchen is allowed to give their own people their day off, their time off. Because it's not fair that they have to work, and while we have a better day of eating and we have our day of refreshments, and they have to continue to work. So I want the kitchen to be either given more personnel, if we have to take a personnel from some place, do so. I'm increasingly distressed that without my consultation, people in the educational department have been uprooted and put in other areas, particularly black teachers. The educators have rightful reason to be disturbed by this matter. I do not think that this makes any sense at all when we are striving for more and more black teachers to take a black teacher. Even some black teachers should be self-criticizing themselves when you've asked to go to other departments. Teaching is a tough job. It is a thankless job. I am an educator, and it's not for that reason that I'm saying it, but I know, being both an administrator and a teacher by experience, working for my living as a teacher and an administrator, I know the thanklessness of it. But those of you that are trying to get out of it better take a look and try to get back in it, because we have been shortchanged in the educational department to a frightening degree. And this is very, very sad in the view of the fact that Shonda, one of our best teachers, is going to have to go, and necessarily so, for increased medical knowledge, dental knowledge, which is beneficial to us all. But some have been put here and there, and I understand that one is out in the fields, and they said they could not lose that person. I recommend immediately that the coordinators release that person and find someone. I think where there's a will, there's a way to get that black person. I don't remember by name who it was. Perhaps Comrade Principal can, or Tom, I'll get away from these titles myself, Tom Grubbs can let me know who that is, but there's someone out in the fields that could be released and needs to be released because education is a vital and essential fact of life here. We have a very good curriculum, and we cannot have a good curriculum continued and perpetuated without the ablest of educators in that system. Would you tell me who that person was? Preston Wade, a black male. We need him. And I would suggest that the coordinators get together immediately to find a way to relieve Preston Wade. There are some people that can be put to work. There are perhaps some ideas, but I want Preston Wade. We have lost 5 black educators, and we cannot afford it. And we'll not. We cannot. Won't. It's senseless. It's absolutely senseless. Well, that's true. That's a bad problem. I don't know who else we're going to have to get a black teacher. Well, this is a note before steering committee, so I didn't know anything about steering committee. And it's a well-taken note. Well, I know, but we're going to get another black person. So we're going to have to come up with a black person in that place. If we can't come up with Creston Wade, we're going to have to come up with someone. He must, I don't know. The following is a poem written by our beloved comrade who laid down the shield, Lynetta. Much of it's crossed out, but it was written not long back. The road of mission. The road of this mission is a lonely road, so few dare enter in. Come with me on the lonely road. Living need not be in vain. Doing whatever of good you may, for never again need I walk this way. So many times have I lived before, doing much, but the need is more. There is forever the awesome pain, should I live these eons over and over again. Then many life spans yet to live, that I may care nor cease to give the road of mission. It isn't the length of the lonely way or the number of years we stay. It's what you can do for suffering men, the mission road, a call to this mission. Let us walk on the road that counts. That's our mission, that our mission may not be in vain. I strike that. Let us walk on the road that counts, that our mission may not be in vain. Doing whatever good we can, for I shall not walk this way again, seeking to help our fellow man. The original handwritten one was in a briefcase of hers. Things saved especially for me. Well, that's something of her to live on. Perhaps later it can be put in wood and put on her memorial site. And I think that path up her way. I thank Nina Herring. I thank Nina Herring for her suggestion. That the path up to Lynetta, tell Nina Herring my thanks, should be called the Lynetta Way, the Lynetta Road. That's very thoughtful, and I think we should commemorate that road up the nursery, goes to her memorial, the Lynetta Lane, or the Lynetta Road, Lynetta Lane, I think she called it. Maria Ruggiero. Her name will be changed to Maria Ruggiero if she does not come before. But I know in counsel and talk with her, she was definitely dual in her mind about coming. She had the same opportunity you had. And if she doesn't come, it would be better, I tell you for her, that she did pass. Because America is so filled with hell and hate. That some who have been with me many, many years could be so demanding in their attitude. All seniors take note. I'd rather give you the opportunity to respond by one admonition without bringing you up publicly. One nurse says, I get so pissed off every time I hear two of our seniors say something about our food or their beds, who are there side by side. Because they act like they have a hotel maid service telling us what time to serve them their breakfast and snapping at the workers if their beds aren't made at a certain time. I also get very short with another LBR's initial because I told her I was sick and tired of hearing her complain about having to live in dirt and laying in the cold all night every night. I think that woman will have to be brought up. That's too strong. And how much she cleans that room and how the others in the room are against her.